Welcome back to the Hawkins Reports, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. I'm your host, Dean.
I'm Jessica.
On this week's episode, we bring you Season 2, Chapter 6, The Spy. Jessica, you said to me, Chapter 5 is the best episode yet. It's so good. And you watched this one before I did, and you were like, Dean, Chapter 6, The Spy, is better than Chapter 5. It's the best episode yet of the second season. So here we go. You've got a lot to say, I think. So how come this is the best episode yet, Jessica? Why? Tell me why.
I like the way the show is trending, where I can say this 2 weeks in a row or two episodes in a row, where I'm like, this is the best episode yet. This is fantastic. And I felt exactly the same when I watched this one. Can't wait to watch the next one. This is the same idea as we saw all of our characters. They're all doing different things, but a lot of them are also coming together, which I really, really liked. I like the groupings of people we get to see. You know, I like Mike sticking by Will and being with Will in the lab. I like the dynamic between Hopper and everybody in there, you know, him trying to reach out to Eleven. I love the Dustin and Steve stuff, obviously. It's fucking fantastic. I love Lucas and Max. Mm-hmm. They're really cute and sweet together. And I mean, Max like grows on me more and more as a character. I think Murray is really fucking funny. I'm afraid we'll never see him again, but he really brightened up the show for me. I mean, and the thing is this episode, the end of this episode was scary. It was scary. It reminded me of like Alien or something. It was a really frightening end. And Will Byers is scary to me now. Like, he's really scary, and he's doing such a fantastic job. And I'm very, very curious to see where we're going to go next after this. This was a huge ending to an episode.
It was massive. Yeah. Great points all around here. You know, when a show, when like you said, isn't it a good trend when I can say 2 weeks in a row that each episode was better than the last? It's definitely better than going the other way, isn't it?
For sure.
Right. And that is definitely a positive for this show so far. And that's, you start to get these episodes that are better than the ones prior to it. And I happen to agree with you. I think this was great. This really puts I think this is the hinge between the first half of the second season and the second half of the second season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hinge episode where we're really going to start spinning our action into a total new direction. Towards our finale, yep. That's better said that way than changing it. But yeah, definitely we're pivoting towards the end of the second season, which is great. And it was good timing. The character moments, again, stay wonderful. I also appreciated the action. One of the things that I think you noticed in this episode, and this was pointed out by mutual friend, listener, and member, Adam Talbot, and he said to me, he said, man, it's like season one is Alien and season two is Aliens. That's kind of just a cool way to say it. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's kind of right. There's the one Demigorgon. It's kind of scary. Now there's a bunch. There's a team of guys, right?
No, it's so true.
It was a good observation by him, so shout out to Adam on that. But yeah, man, the character moments are good. I like that we're seeing a continuously good dialogue, I think. We're seeing good behavior out of these characters and things of that nature. And then the Will stuff has escalated into creep factor.
Yeah.
But not so much to where you get to a point when you're watching Omen and Damien, you're just like, fuck Damien, throw him off the roof into a fire.
Right. But and I feel we talked about this last week too, definitely.
We kind of mentioned it, but with this, it's not that way. You still are rooting for Will.
Right.
You still know that there's goodwill. Like, it's not just a simple, he's been corrupted by the dark side of the force kind of thing. There's still a lot going on with Will that's interesting, and we still care for him. It's not like we're just like, fuck this kid, throw him into a fire.
Right, exactly.
And that's important because Will is a main character, and man, he's had a real tough go, this kid. His two seasons of this show have been spent in a pretty interesting way, which is, you know, he's always laying in a bed. He's always like, right, he's always struggling, and he doesn't get to have a lot of fun. The Will character doesn't get to have a lot of fun like the rest of the kids do.
Yeah, he never
has. There's none of that, really.
Nope,
right?
Never.
Yeah, so plenty to talk about. So let's dive right in.
Okay.
We pick up right where we left off. We're continuing to see this trend as well, which is Will being rushed into some sort of emergency room here, not a real hospital.
At the lab. We are to assume, or I assume.
Sure, because Owens is there and everyone else is there. And it continues with the burning. He says it hurts everywhere. And it's, again, this is, earlier in the season, we saw these close-up medical tests, right, of Will. And it made you kind of feel like this invasive quality mm-hmm. to those scenes. And now we're seeing these continue. But now it's become more of an emergency situation.
Right.
And it's hard to not, and it's hard to not feel bad for the kid. You just feel awful for him, again. And it helps you empathize with Joyce and Hopper and everyone else that's involved with this little kid. And it hurts everywhere, he exclaims, everywhere. And then boom, we go right to our title card and we shoot right over to Dustin and Steve in the car. So I'm going to let you talk to me about this because I know you're very high on these two.
Yeah, so basically they are, you know, talking on the drive to Dustin's house. Dustin wants Steve to come with him and kill the Demogorgon because, you know, Steve has done that before. So he has some experience. And Steve's funny. He doesn't necessarily believe it. He's like, are you sure? And Dustin's like, it ate my cat.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to Dustin's house into the bulkhead, which is locked and nothing seems like it's in there. And what I like about this is when they unlock the door, I love Dustin's. Dustin's like, you go down there and I'm going to stay up here just in case.
Mm-hmm.
When he's holding the flashlight, Dustin, down the stairwell, his hands are shaking.
Yeah, it was a good detail. Tell.
It's really, really good. And Steve does go down alone. But unfortunately, there is no more Dart. Dart has just molted, which means he's gotten bigger. And there's a giant hole in the wall, meaning Dart has actually escaped.
Which means he was strong enough to pull apart the concrete foundation and
right.
crawl through the dirt to wherever the hell he went with the rest of them.
Which is not good news at all.
Yikes.
This thing is, like, bad news.
Getting big, getting strong.
For sure.
Yeah. We get our opening credits after this. My fault.
Yeah.
We see some guys taking pictures of Joyce's house, all the crazy drawings. They've mm-hmm. essentially just gone into her home to try to gather evidence. Anything that they can get to help them in their quest to battle the creatures of the Upside Down, the encroaching Upside Down, as
right,
it were.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And now we go to the Owens and Joyce meeting.
Yeah, she's meeting with Owens and a bunch of other scientists, doctors, lab guys, and, you know, she's arguing her case, you know, that she's been saying that there's something wrong, that Dr. Owens says it wasn't something physical, it was in his head, that she needs mm-hmm. to be patient, blah, 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 and she just wants to know what's wrong, and there's no actual answer to that question at this point.
Yeah, Owens opens this by saying, why didn't you bring him in? Curious, and they kind of think she's not being totally honest with them. And that's when, like you said, she says, well, wait a second.
Yeah, she's pissed.
Right. Can a single person in this room tell me what's wrong with my boy? And of course, none of them can.
Right. And that's the problem. And that's the struggle is they're saying, trust us, trust us, trust us. And obviously she shouldn't trust them. Spoiler alert for later on in the episode. But on top of them saying, trust us, they can't even give her any information at all. They're like, we can do the best for your son, but they also can't tell her why,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
which is very frustrating. I can only imagine. Well, sure. Winona Ryder's great. She's a good mom,
mm-hmm.
let me tell you.
Absolutely. All right. Probably the watershed comedic moment in this series is this scene. All of this stuff with Murray. He's great.
Yeah, Murray's really funny. And like, at first I'm like, is this guy like a creep? And
he might be.
Then I was like, no, he's actually really funny. And I like that he wears like his like bathrobe thing, like basically this entire episode.
Mm-hmm.
He is really fucking funny. And I'm afraid we're not going to see him again. And I'm saddened by that.
Well, yeah, you said that in your opening thoughts. How come you think that?
Because he said, if you want to find me again, don't. And he slammed the door in their face. So I'm afraid he's gone from our lives.
I worry about Murray, to be honest with you.
Like the lab's going to come after him and murder him?
Yeah. And I want to talk about this because the lab is not entirely bad. In fact, you could argue the lab is trying to do good here, right?
Right. They're trying to in a really fucked up kind of way.
Right. So it might not be beneficial for Nancy and Jonathan and Murray to expose the lab and fuck this whole thing up. right?
Right.
It could go badly for the little town, the little sleepy town of Hawkins, should they be exposed.
That's the thing, is that there is definitely, Nancy's so gung-ho on this idea of they kill Barb, I have to expose them, mm-hmm. that she's never stopped to listen to what they've told her, to, you know, think about the bigger picture, mm-hmm. I guess. She's very much in her own head and in a way like being selfish with her own motives, which I know we all are. Everybody is. Everyone has their own motives and they're selfish about what they want out of the situation. But the route Nancy's going could end up in the long run hurting the people that are still around that she wants to help almost, for all we know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely a weird situation. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if we've seen the last of him. I feel like we might see him again, especially if this exposure of the Hawkins lab comes to be.
I think that's going to be more of a season 3 thing.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like in this season, you only have so many episodes and, you know, an army of Demogorgons plus a shadow monster to deal with. And now mm-hmm. Will's evil. So you only have 3 episodes to wrap that shit up. And by the way, we didn't see 11 at all this week.
Right, that was definitely unique. Maybe he's going to go to, I don't know. Maybe it'll be like an end of season sort of something to get us
going.
A
little tag along at the end.
Yeah, maybe. Could be something like that. Let's talk about Murray as it relates to Nancy and Jonathan.
Yeah, they're doctoring the tapes together and getting ready to mail that shit out.
No, I meant in terms of Jonathan.
Oh, you want to skip
Nancy.
Right to the banging. That's what you're trying to say.
I want to skip to it, but what do you feel about Murray as a character as far as that goes?
I mean, isn't that Murray's kind of purpose here, is to just, you know, be the adult that helps Nancy, because it's unrealistic for a 17-year-old kid to be doing this all on her own.
We talked about that.
And then to also, don't we need the catalyst to really get this Nancy-Jonathan thing going here? Like, because they can play around it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both stubborn, you know?
Yeah.
So Murray is kind of used as almost like a plot device to push him in that direction.
Yeah. How do you feel about him pushing them in that direction as a character?
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. You don't think it's creepy?
It's a little creepy. Yes. He has got a little bit of a creep factor to him. But I don't, you know, I don't dislike him per se as a character. He says the stuff that we all know. He's very smart about it. The scene is really funny when he's talking about, oh, you have daddy issues and, you know, your dad is. And John's like, yeah, my dad. Nancy's like, he's an asshole. And he's like, and you're going to run back to what's his name? And John's like, Steve. And like the whole thing is very, you know.
You think he's got a hole in the wall like Norman Bates back there?
I mean, probably.
Yeah. That's a little weird.
He brings young couples into his house and he's like, I know you're in love. Here, go into my guest room.
It's really weird.
I'll cook you breakfast tomorrow.
So let me ask you this. If you knew about a guy who was not like a family member or whatever, and he just like had these two kids come over and fed them vodka and then was like, why don't you guys go fuck in my basement? Come on, really nice. I'd just be upstairs minding my P's and Q's up here while you guys get it on.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fucking creep for sure.
I mean, there'd be pitchforks at the guy's fucking door. Maybe
sure
not in 84. I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't fucking in 84. I wasn't old enough yet, but.
He's for sure a creep.
It's a little weird, right?
He's for sure a creep.
But they play him off as kind of funny and harmless, I think.
That's right.
But I just mean, on the surface, there's one thing, but when you stop and think, there's another thing.
Oh, that's the thing. Like, in general, when you stop and think about it, you're like, this guy's a fucking creep and not a nice person and is really doing something fucked up. But in general, he's played for laughs as like a comedic relief kind of character in scenes.
Sure. Yeah. I literally laughed out loud and at one part, which we'll get to.
Did.
But anyway, he does all this back and forth stuff and he says it's a curse to see so clearly, which I thought was funny. But he does a little psychoanalyzing. He calls them out for lying, calls them adorable, goes to bed. Says, I'd cut the bullshit, share the bed. And then Jonathan and Nancy.
he brings up too in his issue when he's going back and forth with them mm-hmm. about, you know, the daddy issues and Nancy running back to Steve because he's safe. We like Steve. We don't love Steve. He says, you have a shared history. You have chemistry, or you have history of chemistry, and you have the most important thing, shared trauma, which I think we've talked about a lot in this mm-hmm. podcast when it comes to the two of them and their relationship with each other and why it worked for when it did work and why it stopped working when it stopped working.
Yeah.
And now they're in the same boat where they're like, okay, we can move past this, but I feel like we're going to retread and we're going to take a step back now where he's off banging Nancy and all of this happened with Will and he missed all of it and wasn't there for it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I feel like all of this that they just happened and moved past, we're going to immediately retreat backwards because of what went on at home during it.
It's possible.
And it comes back to there's this shared trauma, but there's also a difference in their trauma.
And then one last question. Is it less creepy if they're 25? Is it because they're high school kids? I mean, I don't know. Anyway.
Maybe. Then he'd be a swinger. He'd be like, hey, let's just get it together. All three of us.
There you go.
Yep.
All right. Let's move over to...
Still, we're still with them.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
We stay with them.
We stay with them to the whole thing.
To the banging.
Got it.
Not to your favorite part.
Yeah.
That's a later scene.
I had a question mark. Where do they get their PJs?
I think they brought them because they knew they were going to stay out, remember? They've already stayed in a hotel one night.
Okay, got it.
So, I mean, unless Marie's like, you look like you're about a size 4. Hold
goes
on
into
a second.
Fucking creepy
pulls
closet.
Pulls out a nightgown.
Takes it off one of his fucking real dolls. He's like, Samantha, I got to borrow this for tonight. A real girl's about to get boned. Love. I love facilitating high school sex. It's awesome.
Oh my God.
Right? He's like, oh, Jonathan, maybe I can put this fucking thermal underwear on you for your shirt. And these fucking PJ bottoms. Let's see. Let me take that off my fucking Joey sex doll.
He in the chat, Junkfist says, so how do you guys get together? Quote, an old man got us drunk and told us to. What a story to tell the grandkids.
Nice.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, let's, so yeah, they make out and do some fucking for sure. So,
it's not just making out. They meet, they're like, oh no, we're not gonna make out. But then they make out, the music, the fucking 80s music swells. Mm-hmm. Cut to other favorite character, Erica, Lucas's sister, with He-Man and her Barbie doll. I love you, He-Man. He's so cute.
I like how Lucas is like, they don't even exist on the same planet, right?
Yeah, Lucas is fucking serious about this shit. He mm-hmm. does not want her messing around, okay? Yeah.
Straight nerd creds right there.
Yeah. And then she's funny. That gets her to do her code red, Lucas, code red. Like, she's so fresh. She's such a fresh little girl. Like, she's so sassy.
Yeah. They're hoping that Jonathan's pullout game is strong in the chat, Jesse, yeah. But listen, Jesse, if this guy created some sort of weird underage sex escape fucking haven, he probably has a bunch of condoms around the bedside for him there. But who knows?
For their sake.
So yeah, I don't know. But a bunch of nerds, code red. Lucas freaks out, calls Jess, Dustin. Dustin tells him something that I know you wrote down word for word because you loved it so much.
Yeah, he said. he gets in touch with Dustin. Dustin's mad. Dustin says, well, while you were having sister problems, Dart grew again. He escaped. And I'm pretty sure he's a baby Demogorgon. And this literally made me laugh out loud.
It's good shit.
And then he's like, meet me and Steve. And Lucas is like, Steve Harrington.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. I like how exacerbated he is at such an idea. Like, why are we hanging out with this guy? Why is he part of it, right?
It's the most, like, random, like, in strange grouping, but it makes sense and works out perfectly. And like I said last week, we have to give Steve something new to do.
It's true.
We can't, again, retread him back with Nancy together. It doesn't work. It's not going to work anymore.
Sure.
So if we're going to keep Steve as a part of the show, we have to give him an in somewhere else. He has to somehow be involved in this group in another way because he's not related to any of these kids. Mm. Like, Nancy and Jonathan aren't always involved because of their situation. But if we don't have Steve with Nancy, we have to have another way to keep him in the story. And so here's our way to keep him in the story.
There you go.
He's going to hang out with Dustin and help him kill a Demogorgon.
He is.
I love that Dart is a baby Demogorgon. I don't know. It just makes me laugh so much. I don't know why. I just love it.
Let's talk Hopper and Owens. Talk about... Hopper essentially is getting cleared here, medically cleared to get the fuck out of this quarantine they have him in.
He looks like he feels like shit.
Mm.
Ugh.
Owens wants him to see something though. So this is, I think this is kind of important. it might seem like a throwaway scene, but it's important that Owens trusts Hopper enough to continue feeding him information.
Yes.
And this information is pretty important.
Yes.
They take an access elevator down. Owens explains that living things defend against attack. They find a way to survive, right? This whole thing.
Yes.
And he shows Hopper how bad it has spread. When Owens is asked why they aren't burning it, Owens says, well, there is a complication. Right. But I like this a lot. I like that we get to, I mean, the elevator, this access elevator going down, is it looks great.
That's real cool.
All the, I love the atmosphere down here and around them. It's pretty awesome. And yes, that is a hard cut to Joyce, Will, Bob, and Mike, right?
It is. And I just want to say about, you know, with Hopper and Owens and stuff, again, Owens is this character who we put in here and he's just set up to be this bad guy, you know, like secretly a bad guy. And I feel like by the end of this episode, he's really not. I feel like right. They were like, hey, if we're going to put Paul Reiser in the show, we're going to do the switcheroo and he's going to be a good guy. And I feel confident he's a good guy by the end of this episode. And his willingness to talk to Hopper and the way he cares about Will and he doesn't want to just do the burn, that he wants to do something else. He wants to give it a chance, although it's going to get a bunch of people killed. You know, it shows that he does actually care. Like, you know, there's something legit.
Sure.
In his actions.
Yeah. He wants to try to help this kid out, right?
Right, for sure.
But yeah, you're right. It's almost like a bunch of writers in a fucking writing room didn't think, boy, the Paul Reiser betrayal is a little too on the nose, right?
Yeah, I think they knew they could not go that route.
But I do like that we're seeing a little bit more to him. He's not 100% good to where he's just being a total renegade, which I like. He's still being a guy who has a mission, but he's trying to get some time while the board is sort of fighting him on, or at least a couple members of the board seem to be outwardly fighting him on.
Right.
There's a bunch of other people who are silent, but Owens, Owens trusts Hopper here.
Right. And God, I feel like when they cast the show, they were like, hey, we need this lab guy. And they're like, know who we want. Like, I feel like this is on purpose. I feel like this is, you know, an homage to like an alien thing, and where you're like, all right, our show touches upon the same type of feeling a lot of the time, and wouldn't that be great? Cat, like, you don't think they were like, oh, let's go get Paul Reiser?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like they did.
Yeah,
I feel like they wanted him.
So Joyce, Will, and Bob and Mike, they talk confidentiality agreements. Bob can't even believe what's going on. You know, only in movies and comic books, he says.
Oh,
more meta jokes from this man.
Bob Newby, superhero, he says.
Yep,
which is adorable.
And Bob says, you know what? Don't worry about me. You know, it's this is not a normal family. He laughs about remembering how she said this to him.
Mm-hmm.
How Maine seems less crazy. But
and Joyce agrees.
It's a nice intimate moment between the two, you know?
But what I find interesting here is, you know, and he's like, hey, the moving to Maine isn't such a crazy idea. And Joyce is like, no, it's not crazy at all. Like, she's got that idea in her head now, like, this is the thing that we're going to do, even though we know that that's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's nice, like, for Joyce to think about, like, there could be a future beyond this, you know, specific thing.
Sure.
And you know what? I fucking like Bob. I really like Bob.
Me too.
He's so adorable, and he's so sweet, and he's legitimately a good person who just wants to be, like, typical dad joke dad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I just like him.
Dad joke.
And I'm sad because I know, like, in the end, Joyce is going to end up with Hopper and break poor Bob's heart, and, you know, that's coming one day.
You never know.
Man, he's a sweetie, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's just real sweet in the scene. I love when he says, Bob Newby, superhero. I just thought I just wanted to hug him. I love him. I love you, Samwise Gamgee.
Sean Astin is very huggable.
Isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He is. I don't know. He's a sweetie.
But Will has a bit of a moment here. He wakes up and doesn't recognize Bob. In fact, he recoils from his touch.
Yeah, that is a really cool moment.
Asks him if he's a doctor.
Yep.
Nope, just Bob.
That is very interesting to me, because now we're setting up kind of what's going on with Will, of this almost like his mind is moving backwards.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's some type of amnesia. Like a retrograde amnesia almost, where he remembers up to a certain point, but only up to a certain point.
It's interesting.
He's not, and you hear about those things where people with amnesia, like sometimes they can remember their entire childhoods, but they can't remember the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as people
sure.
experience trauma typically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if that is what's happening to him,
mm-hmm.
where there's been this trauma and he's lost his memory surrounding it, but it's how far back does it go? And as we'll watch the brain scans continue, it continues to go further and further back. Because even when he's trying to think about who Mike is, he's like, you're my friend. And it takes him a second to even come up with a name.
Mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, you know what I wonder about that? Do you think this is a byproduct of the trauma, or do you think this is a directed attack against his memory by the Upside Down?
I think it's probably a directed attack from the Upside Down, or something in the way that he's connected with them. Maybe the more longer he's connected, the more things that happen, the more of his memory he loses.
So then it becomes a question as to why attack his memory.
So he's not sharing information, maybe. You know, like the spy, like
Mike says. Doesn't trust them enough, or
right,
possibly.
If he doesn't know them, then he's not going to trust them, and it's almost like, you know, slowly taking memory. But that's just the best way I can think of it, is that amnesia due to trauma, where you lose more recent memories surrounding it, but he's just continuing to regress more and more and more.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't know. That's the feeling I get.
So Maura makes some breakfast for the young couple.
I would agree.
How was the pullout? Literally watching this and laughed out loud, because the line is delivered so well by the actor, creep or not.
No, so well.
In the sofa, he specifies. The sofa, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking Jonathan almost barfs on his coffee or whatever they're drinking.
In Nancy's face, this scene is played so well between the three of them.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Where Murray's like, yep, they banged last night. And they're like so awkward. And Jonathan's so quiet. And like Nancy's got this look on her face like she wants to smile, but she can't smile.
Yeah, it's good.
And it's so believable the way these two just sit at the table across from each other being like, hey, we just had sex last night. And we know, nobody else knows. And what do? We don't want people to know. It's perfect. Like they just play it so, especially Nancy. She just plays that so well.
She does.
And Jonathan's so awkward. It's, I don't know. It's really cute, to be honest with you.
Later, Nancy calls mom and tells her she'll be home soon. She reports that Mike is at Will's. Murray gives them vodka and water. Don't thank me yet. Keep your eyes on the papers. If you need to reach me again, don't.
Bye, Murray.
Bye, Murray.
Nice knowing you.
Let's shoot over to Lucas and Billy.
Lucas and Billy, you say?
Well, it's more like Max and Billy, and then Lucas kind of enters it.
Okay. I have to say this thing that you hate when I say it.
So fucking funny, man.
Billy is such a... in my notes, I wrote... Hold on. Billy is being a douchebag piece of shit as usual. That's what I wrote. That's all I wrote about him in this scene.
Dude.
Why is he such a fucking weirdo?
Dude, he's fucking curling and smoking...
with the TV on and music.
Oh my God. And then he's benching his curl weight, which was funny. But it's just so ridiculous. It's so chaotic. Like, this is such a chaotic life.
Oh my God,
for
I
Max.
Know.
Like, all this fucking noise. She's trying to get a moment in her room. And this girl is like full of anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, she storms off. She's trying to tape up her skateboard. Billy's making her enter the door, which is probably a good thing retrospectively.
Yep.
What are you doing here? Says he has proof. Max runs back inside, heads off Billy by saying it was Mormons. Of course, Billy's doubtful. He goes to check. Nobody's there. Max slips out the window and onto Lucas's bike. This better be good, stalker.
Yeah, yeah.
Ballsy Lucas. I like that.
Yeah, I know. I like Lucas. Lucas has gotten a lot of good stuff to do this season.
I like him a lot, too.
Him and Dustin have had a lot of great stuff this season. It's been good to see a lot of
Mike
them.
Mike has been tame.
We've seen very little Mike.
Because he was the fucking, ran the show in the first season.
And he also just was probably busy filming a movie called Stephen King's It.
It's true.
So in the meta sense, I think he was busy. Yeah. It was time for some other kids to get the spotlight.
That's a good point.
No offense, but that's probably part of the reason too. But that's great because it gave all these other kids a chance to shine, and they shine they have, you know?
Mm.
They've been great.
Man, it must be brutal to see your kid hooked up with all this shit to his head, but it continues. Owens and Will and everyone else is sort of like a whole group there surrounding Will's bedside.
Right.
And he knows his name. He knows Owens is a doctor, but that's not really a stretch because the way he's dressed. He doesn't remember if they've met. He remembers Mike by starting with my friend, like you mentioned, and then he offers Mike later. Hopper says, hey, what about me, buddy? Will does not remember Hopper or what happened last night. Just that he was hurt.
And this is, again, when we're talking about time, like how far back he remembers. He's known Hopper for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Hopper's a cop in the town. Joyce obviously has some type of relationship with him. And him not remembering Hopper says that there's probably a lot he doesn't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hurt me, the soldiers. They shouldn't have done that. It upset him.
What do you think about, you know, we were just talking about memory and stuff. Is it possible that the shadow monster has almost like a shared consciousness with Will, And consequently, it's replacing some of his memories with its. And maybe that's what, maybe like if the shadow monster doesn't know these people, Will doesn't, kind of thing.
Right. Okay. So they hurt me, the soldiers. They shouldn't have done that. It upset right. him. So like maybe that's all his memory is the shadow monster's memory of
it's possible.
Being hurt.
It's a replacement thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Some sort of weird, there's definitely a weird symbiotic relationship going on here. And it's possible that his memories are just being clouded out by the shadow monsters.
That is true.
It's kind of neat.
That's true.
But yeah, they hurt me. They shouldn't have done that. It upset him. Mm-hmm. But he still makes the distinction, right? He doesn't say me again.
No.
But you see how he's oscillating mm-hmm. back and forth?
Yes.
So Owens hands him a drawing of the shadow monster. Is that him? Will answers yes. And then they have this pretty creepy test with the butane torch here.
And some slug thing.
And a slug thing. And well, it's bad. We see the connection immediately. Which is why Owens
said there was a complication.
Has a complication. And look, he breaks it down for him. Hopper has to tell him to stop. I mean, they put this kid through the fucking ringer. Mm-hmm. Like, knock it off. But in the hallway, Owens and Joyce and Hopper are chatting, which I asked you last night, but we'll repeat it here on the pod. I said, why isn't Bob out there? But your answer was pretty solid.
Yeah, you know, there's been this shared information between Joyce and Hopper for a long time. They've both been involved in every visit Will's had to this place. So whereas Bob is this new person who probably hasn't even signed the confidentiality papers yet. So they still need to, he's still giving the information to people he knows and has established a relationship with. And
makes
Bob is just not
sense.
That person yet.
Makes total sense.
You know?
Yep. He calls it a virus. He says, this virus and the host seem to be communicating. They have a hive intelligence and it is connecting all the hosts. Did you notice that?
Yes.
What's all the hosts?
That's, you know, obviously there's more than just the monster and Will. It has to do with all those things under there, which is my question later about the Demogorgons. Are mm-hmm. they connected as well?
Well, if there's a hive intelligence that Will is being integrated into, it would explain his faulty memory.
Yes.
Right?
That's true.
He says, well, a virus can be cured.
Yes.
I don't, can it? I thought it could only be prevented.
No, a virus can be cured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you had to be inoculated prior to getting a virus.
No, you can cure a virus.
Okay. Shows you how much I know about medicine. I thought you could only treat them.
Well, yeah, you can treat it, but it'll go away on its own when you treat the symptoms.
Yeah, you're more treating the symptoms and letting it run its course. You can prevent them with inoculations.
Right.
Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter. I know what he's trying to say. I'm just being an asshat. We are going to run some tests, see what we can find. And Joyce says something, a pretty haunting question. What happens when my boy is gone, referring to his memory?
Yes.
Because I think she sees it as a increasing loss of memory over time.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad news.
Yes, it's very bad news.
Ooh, boy, poor Will. God, kid can't catch a fucking break.
I know. Will's only had sadness, honestly.
Mm. Yeah. Well... So, Dustin and Steve on the railroad tracks, this is our little, again, didn't they do a railroad track walk before on the way to the junkyard in season one?
Because
we said it was like
did.
Stand By Me, right?
Yeah, I believe they did.
And this is like it again. By the way, Steve's weapon is hilarious. It's so stupid.
But isn't that like the fucking guy in Walking Dead? Isn't that what he has?
I don't know. I don't watch that show.
Isn't that what Negan has? Is the bat with the nails on it?
He has a bat wrapped in barbed wire.
Oh, all right.
Which is smarter because when you drive nails through the bat, you're kind of compromising the integrity of its like strength. It's going to break when you hit something.
Honestly, Dean, have you killed a Demogorgon with your bat with nails in it yet? Because last I checked, Steve Harrington did fight a Demogorgon and you did not. So let's not judge.
No,
okay,
but
his
I
weapon.
Killed a lot of... A lot of kids that got lost in the woods.
You killed a lot of kids.
Just like these two. I come right out of the woods with my bat, which has perfect hull integrity, and break it upon their precious little heads.
Oh, my God.
No, but anyway, I love the scene. I like that they're walking down the railroad tracks with fucking chum, like they're hunting for Jaws, putting chum in the ocean.
I love this scene.
So, you kept something dangerous to impress a girl you just met. Steve wonders,
yeah.
Thinks this is pretty funny.
Let me get this straight, he says. And he's like, how do you know she'd like it? Why would she like a slug? And he's like, it's an interdimensional space slug or whatever he says. He's like, because it's cool.
He tries to tell Dustin, act like you don't care. And Dustin says, well, even if you do, drives him nuts. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And his advice is, you know, until you feel it, it's like an electricity. Mm-hmm. You feel that and then you make your move. And he says, some girls want you to be aggressive. Some girls want you to be slow. Dustin asks about Nancy and he says she was different.
Mm-hmm. Act like you don't care. Drives and nuts. Drive you nuts.
Well, a guy acts like they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's actually the truth about women.
Yeah, no, I know.
Like 100%.
Yeah, but I didn't want to just assume your opinion.
Oh, no. Like that is actually true.
Right, because it's because you're trying to avoid like clinger, like over the top, way too like into you, right? No, that's too creepy. That gets too creepy, right?
It's not. Yeah, sometimes it does, but it's also not even just that. It's just that, and I don't know why or the psychology behind it, but there's something about like I've dated many a guy in the day that I had no interest in dating when they liked me. And the second they didn't like me, I was like, oh, why don't they like me anymore? And then I'd be upset. And then next thing you know, I'm dating some idiot for 4 years
so what
that
you're
I
saying,
can't stand.
So what you're saying is this is a complete and utter lack of fucking, a fucking utter lack of self-worth. is that what this is? As in an utter lack of self-worth. So the second you feel like,
I'm just being honest.
Yeah, no, I got you. I'm just fucking with you.
That's the way this shit works a lot of the time. But it doesn't always work that way, but, you know, sometimes it does.
Yeah.
Sometimes a guy is nice to you, but just like Steve says, he says some girls are different. They want you to be aggressive, and some girls, you know, like, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's always a different circumstance. But he's also right in the fact that, yes, a lot of the time when you make them feel like you don't care, then they want you to care. It's just, it's
absolutely
a thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's, I agree with his logic.
Yep.
So, it is
There's some deep primal shit going on there, baby. All right, so Steve continues. He tells Dustin about sexual electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Some girls, yeah, you said all that. He said, some want you to be a lion, some want you to be a ninja. What kind of girl is Nancy? She's different. She's special. He immediately gets, I wouldn't say defensive, but you can tell that he holds Nancy in a certain regard.
High regard. Mm-hmm. Very, very high regard. And even Dustin says she seems pretty special. Steve's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dustin talks about how Max is special and stuff, too. And Steve does his perfect, like, big brother. He's like, hey, you're not falling in love with this girl, are you? Because don't.
Indeed.
She's just going to break your heart and you're too young for that shit.
Indeed.
And in this moment, I say, I know you're 17, Steve Harrington, but I'm in love with you.
You're kind of like the female Murray.
Exactly. Right. That's why I like him. I relate.
Are you going to slip into his room afterwards and just roll around in his sheets after he leaves, you fucking weirdo? Anyway.
It's cute.
Steve talks about Fabergé and Farrah Fawcett sprays. This is fucking funny that we've been making jokes about hair products this whole season. And here we go.
I love that he gives the information because like Dustin makes him joke about Steve's great hair. And Steve's like, it's not the hair. And he's like, hey, here's how I get my hair. And he's like, if you tell anybody, I'll kill you, basically.
Indeed.
But it's sweet. And it's, you know what I mean? He's being sweet and he's giving Dustin advice and
he's disclosing personal information about himself.
To this kid,
but
right.
Nobody else probably knows.
And it's very, very, it's very endearing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word I want to use. It's endearing.
Yep. And I like that he says, if you tell him your ass is grass, it's so fucking 80s. Your
ass
is grass and I'm the lawnmower. Forgot about that part. But we see that the boys are straying into the marked evidence territory. We see the little evidence flags,
mm-hmm.
right? And we have a touching moment from Hopper.
Oh, this is like heart-wrenching, honestly.
It's really good.
Like heart-wrenching.
Hopper tries Morse code with 11. He then tries to reach her via the CB. He tells her that he's been gone and it's not about their fight. He's not mad. I'm just sorry about everything. I don't want you to get hurt at all, and I don't want to lose you. Heat up some real food, okay? Not just Eggos, and eat all the peas, even if they're mushy and gross. I will be calling you soon. This is awesome.
This is the way he speaks to her. One, he's so emotional. He does mm-hmm. such a good job in this scene. It's hard to monologue to nobody and be emotional. Mm-hmm. I took acting classes in high school and college for like a long time. That's hard shit to do when you have nobody to play off of and mm-hmm. you have to be that way. And there's such like an intimate, I feel like that's the wrong word, but like this connection between them about the things where he says, he's like, hey, eat some real food, not just Eggos, like and eat the peas, even if they're mushy, like these inside jokes, these personal things that they've come to, you know, over their time together, mm-hmm. I guess, have become, you know, talking points, conversations. And that's him saying that when he's like, eat all the peas, even if they're mushy. Like, this is obviously something that he said multiple times to her in the past. It's something that's been a conversation in their household. There's something familial about it, I guess. And it's really sweet and it's really sad and like heartbreaking because you know, she's not hearing it. She's not there.
Yeah.
For all she knows, he left and he was mad at her and didn't come back.
For sure.
And you can tell that he's so worried. And as I said earlier in the episode where he apologized to her, he again apologizes here. And again, he still strikes me as the type of person who does not apologize.
Sure.
And that it's hard for him to do and that he really means it. And I don't know, it's really emotional to watch.
Yeah, it's also, you know, there's a lot of guilt wrapped up in not just 11, but his prior daughter who's dead. I mean, when you think about, Hopper's probably like, here it is. I get this second chance to be this positive, strong person for somebody and I'm not there again. Like there must be tremendous guilt that he's feeling around how he's handling 11. Obviously, a lot of this shit is beyond his control, but it's still not going to make him feel any better. And we're seeing that really come out here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I have it just up on Netflix. Just
me too.
Watching it and like just his face and the way he's like hunched over and he's so close to that mic.
It's great.
Man, he's a good actor. He does such a good job in the scene.
So Owens talks to the rest of the board here. They're talking about Will's abnormalities and thus this imagery of his brain activity.
Mm-hmm.
The doctors tell Owens that they really just can't keep delaying this burn.
Yeah, they're like, listen, this guy's going to die anyways, so whatever.
And I know this is shitty to say, but it's not like they're completely out of left field with this thought process.
Oh, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few?
Well, you would imagine these guys would think something like that, right?
Yeah.
They're not all going to think the same way.
Because they don't have a connection or a relationship with Will, which Owens now does, because he's been the one dealing with Will for all this time, which is why Owens is going to press forward and not want to do what these other people want to do. And I like that.
Right.
Yeah. I like that there's a reason behind it. It's not just like he's the ultimate good guy. It's that, no, he has a personal relationship with Will at this point.
Sure.
And these other doctors don't. They've just watched Will on a video camera all this time. He's the one who's dealt with him directly. Of course, he doesn't just want to kill this kid.
Right.
Who he's developed a relationship with the kid and with his family as well.
Yep. And you know, it's I disagree with the great Spock. The needs of the many do not always outweigh the needs of the few, especially if those few can do greater good than the many in the end, right?
And it's also all because you can't
predict it. My guess is Will is going to be some sort of Trojan horse to get rid of this whole thing. And if they lost Will, they might lose that advantage to fight this thing. And then it kills everybody anyway, and Will.
Right.
So it's tough to say. It's tough to make such a broad statement like that because you don't know the quality of the many versus the quality of the few.
Right.
Especially in this case.
And the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few only works in like a vacuum. Like it doesn't work.
Correct.
There's always perspective.
Right.
And that's why these people who don't know Will believe the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And Owens, who knows Will, can't get by that.
Mm-hmm.
It's always going to be that way.
It goes beyond simple math.
Right, exactly, right. Exactly.
So, he's not amused with that. He doesn't seem to be entertaining this for a minute. He's obviously emotionally affected by it. Not so heavily, but enough to where he's like, I gotta take a walk.
Yeah.
I'm going to go think. So Joyce tries to storm by the guards without luck.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we see that Will has some perspective here. He has vision on this. Did you catch him zooming in on the guns?
Yes.
I thought for sure that guy was going to blow his own brains out. I was
like he had telekinetic powers or something?
Yes, or telepathy. I thought that was for sure going to happen.
Yeah.
We see him thinking of the incinerator units. Mike sort of snaps him out of it, and Will says he saw something, the shadow monster. I think I know how to stop him, he says.
Yes. Which is great news, except it's a lie.
It's a lie.
I
mean, he lies right to his friend.
I know. This is hard. That's
no joke. I like this a lot. This is good shit. So we move over to the junkyard. Lucas and Max join Dustin and Steve.
I love when they get to the junkyard and Steve's like, yeah, this'll do. He's got his sunglasses on. And he's like all like, and Dustin's all excited that Steve's like telling him it's a good job. You know what I mean? It's very cute.
Yep, sure.
I'm real down. I'm real up on this bromance, real high on it. Steve hanging out with the kids.
Will and Lucas talk while kind of nobody's around. They're on the other side of the car chit-chatting. He tries to explain there's no Hopper. Why do you think I'm with Steve Harrington? And then Steve like smashes the back of the car. He's like, hey, dickheads, I got some random girl helping me. You guys want to help me out? That's so funny.
That made me laugh so hard.
It's
yeah.
Great.
How come the only one helping me out is this random girl?
It's such a thing that I feel like the kid would say.
It made me like laugh out loud.
Yep.
And it's just funny, like, but Lucas is funny where he's like, oh, Max didn't believe me. And Dustin's like, you just didn't tell it right. You know, Dustin still has that feeling that maybe Max is his girl.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Spoiler alert, you're the Steve Harrington in the story, buddy.
That's a good one. Shit.
Sorry, oh, Dustin.
Anyway, Jonathan and Nancy, you know, they realized while they were out fucking that people started disappearing and leaving their houses open.
With so, fucking crazy drawings everywhere. Yes. Because don't forget, Will hasn't seen those yet. I mean, Jonathan hasn't seen those yet.
Jonathan just might be like, can I get 5 fucking minutes? Where's my blow?
True. He's like, the lab definitely took that. Fuck.
He finds the film casing there and he's like, I don't use Polaroid. Someone else has been here, so.
Yeah. No duh, Jonathan.
No duh. So they pull Will out of his little thing and they have him examining the evidence, which was all the photographs of the drawings. And it's set up in a way that it was in the house. And Will sort of walks around the table examining it, and he points out, he says, that's it. He points to a spot. He doesn't want me to see there. I think it is important.
Yes.
Cut to the soldiers immediately gearing up to go to that spot.
I love
this. Is not Will talking, right?
No, it's definitely not Will talking. But I love the scene where we watch the soldiers getting ready, and we watch the Losers Club, essentially.
Yeah, right.
Which is Hunter Balch in the chat just says, cool, Steve Harrington is part of the Losers Club now.
Very cool.
But them getting ready for their fight. Like, everyone's getting ready with the fucking awesome music where I am just sold on everything. I'm like, this is great. I'm excited. I'm pumped. We're going to kill some Demogorgons. We're going to win. And Will's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And everything's fine. I still trust Will now. I'm just like Dr. Owens. Mm-hmm. I trust you, Will.
That's it.
Shame on me.
We got a team preparing to move out a la Aliens, where they have like monitoring them from the control room. That's neat. It's like a fire team, basically. Cue to the kids piling into the bus. And then sundown comes, and Lucas scopes out the area with his binoculars. I love this. I love his fucking bandana that he's wearing, the camo bandana.
Yeah, because he wore it in the last
sweet.
One.
Yeah.
And I know, like, when we did the It podcast, like, we talked about this so much, but this reminds me so much of It, like, the book and, like, the Losers Club, just so much. And just, you know, Lucas with that bandana, and it makes me just, I don't know, there's just something about it that it just feels like that so much to me.
Yeah, it definitely captures the feeling correctly.
It really does.
Max asks Steve about fighting one of these things and asks him if she's sure it wasn't a dog, a bear. Dustin gives her a case of the ass, right?
Yeah.
That's good, Steve says. Show you don't care.
That's so funny.
Dustin says, I don't. Now, I highlighted this in my notes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he doesn't?
No, I think that he... I definitely
think, he's
still
seeing
cares,
the writing on the wall.
I think he's seeing their 100%. Yeah. That's what I think it is.
I think so too.
I think he cares, but he's like, he sees, you know, Max with Lucas and understands. But I love his part where he says, I don't. And then he says, stop winking, Steve.
He gets so mad at him. Because I think he is. Yeah, I think he is. I think he's submitted here to this.
He realizes that it's not about him trying to make Max like him or not like him, that there's already something between Max and Lucas. Mm-hmm. And what can he do in this scenario?
She goes out to the roof with Lucas. She calls the fog awesome, says it kind of looks like the ocean. So she reminisces a bit at this. Lucas asks her if she misses it. All this must seem lame, I bet. She's from California. And Max kind of lays it down, right? What does she say here?
Yeah, she talks about basically her family. She says, you know, her dad's still in California. And then Max does something which I jokingly said to Dean when we were watching the episode is like the Vizina method of dealing with sadness and trauma, which is make a sarcastic joke about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, her dad's still in California and Lucas is like, oh, and she's like, you see, there's this legal term called divorce when two parents don't love each other anymore. And in this moment, I love Max and I'm sold on her and I'm fully on board with her being a member of this club for the rest of the show. Like,
awesome.
I don't know. I just love her so much in this moment and I relate to her and she just, I don't know, her sense of humor. But, so she's being honest and she's opening up to Lucas and talking about things and she jokes and she, you know, protects herself by being sarcastic, but she's also honest with him about, you know, Billy takes his anger out on her and she doesn't want to be a jerk like Billy, but she knows she can get angry and she's sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, And I just like Lucas's reaction. He's like, tells her she's awesome.
Yeah,
and
it's cool.
He makes her laugh. He says, totally tubular. And then in my notes, I wrote, can you ship 12-year-olds? Because I do. So.
Max admits she doesn't want to be like her brother, too. And he's just totally unbothered. You know, you're totally not like him.
Yeah.
It's great. I like talking with you, Mad Max. I like talking with you, Stalker.
It's very sweet.
What do you think of Max outing with some of her background here? You know, we've always wondered, obviously this is a show not tell situation. This is a tell not show situation,
right.
But it's already happened unless you wanted to do a flashback on Max.
So
I think she would have been stupid, right?
Nope, I think this is perfect. I think
right.
This is a perfect way to get a little bit of her backstory. I think it makes sense in the story for her at this point, you know, while they're sitting up there, while, you know, Lucas asks her about California, how she feels like she can trust him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a perfect time for her to say something to him, to open up to him about it without us having to see a flashback. We don't have to see Max's parents fighting and getting divorced and moving her out here to understand how she feels. All we need is for her to have this conversation.
Sure.
And that's enough. And I think it makes sense. It doesn't feel like...
manufactured.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like we're telling for the sake of telling, essentially.
Right, exactly. There seems to be a... It seems to work into the storyline into where a way it's not just talking head bullshit.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, gotcha. Let's just talk about the final action here. We got the Demogorgon fight in the junkyard, and of course, the aliens team being just overwhelmed and destroyed.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Demogorgons and then move to the... Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let it rip.
So Lucas spots Dart, but Dart doesn't seem to want to go for the bait. And
correct.
Steve gets his idea that, well, he's probably sick of eating all that cow. So he's going to go outside and be the bait, essentially.
Yes.
Which he feels okay about, because let's remember correctly, Steve already fought a bigger Demogorgon,
mm-hmm.
and he's got this whole trap set up. It's going to be perfect if he can just get him in the right spot.
Yep. Do you think there's part of Steve here that has some doubt that it's not what it is? I'm not saying that to take away from his bravery, but...
I don't, necessarily.
Okay.
I think that he thinks that it is the same thing as before, but he's almost cocky about it.
I think so too. I think you're right on the money, because
he's
I
ready
think,
to be heroic again.
I don't think you go into the basement, find melted skin, and then find concrete literally destroyed and think it could be any other type of animal we
right.
know of.
Exactly.
That would be in their location. You know, it's not a goddamn Bengal tiger.
Right.
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 But there's more than one. Bad news bears.
And even before this point where we see the second one, so here's the thought I had of where we were going to go here in this scene. Is I thought they were going to get this Demogorgon, that there was just going to be the one. They were going to set it on fire, and it was going to affect Will. And the people in the lab weren't going to know what to do or how to move forward and help him. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That was my concern in this scene, because if it's all a hive mind and they're all connected, is that going to affect him as well? And obviously, we don't know. We don't see this. So maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That still remains to be seen. But... instead of that being what we're leading to Lucas noticing another Demogorgon and another and another and another. And Steve is fucked.
Right.
Abort mission.
Yeah.
Basically.
But bad news. Steve thinks back to the training that Billy gave him.
Oh, gosh.
I'm just kidding. They bar themselves into the bus. Dustin calls out on the radio. Another one goes for the roof. It screeches down into the escape door of the van, and then it takes off. We hear a lot of cool howling into the night. I love that.
Yes.
Steve goes outside, all is quiet. They're going somewhere, he says. And of course, cut to our aliens fire team.
Yeah, this is
getting the shit kicked out of them.
In this scene, the Demogorgon scene with the kids, it's, you know, I like Steve is heroic. He's gonna block the kids and, you know, be the guy in charge before they all take off. And, you know, this important notice of one, Lucas and Max are holding hands, which Dustin clearly notices, right?
Yes.
And someone say maybe Steve scared them off, and even Steve is like, nope.
Nope.
They're going somewhere.
Yep. They were fucked.
They would have died, yeah.
They were
for sure.
Fucked.
We were talking about that. If it wouldn't have been for what Will did, they would have been dead.
Obviously, it makes for a pretty crappy show if that's the case. But, yeah, you had to believe it.
It's funny that Will saved his friends by basically killing a bunch of other people.
Right on. But group moves to the tunnel. Hop realizes that the men Oh, that's the men are where he was. He calls it a graveyard. The men report that nothing's there. We hear howls. And then I like this. Fog pours into the tunnels.
Yes.
Which was awesome. And I wonder if they were responsible for the fog in the junkyard. It's some sort of way to mask their approach. Will says he's sorry. He made me do it. Who? I told you. They upset him. Will says they shouldn't have done that. And Mike freaks out.
Yeah, they shouldn't have upset him. And Mike says it's the spy. Mm-hmm. And he goes down the hall screaming.
By the way, cool idea that we set up the idea of Will being a spy that later then works in reverse for them.
Which was Will's fear. And he said that same thing to Mike. He said, but if I can spy on them, can they spy on me? And Mike said, we won't let them.
That's right. And little kid shit to say.
Here we are, where it happened exactly that way.
Yes. The demos close in and just fucking kill everyone. Mike tries to warn the men. Of course, he's stopped by the guards. It's chaos.
Yes.
And they are easily overwhelmed. I mean, there's really no fight.
They're not prepared for this.
Not prepared. Will cries. It's too late, he tells Joyce.
He says, you should go now. Mm-hmm. They're almost here.
We hear static crackling. Yeah. Yeah, this is good shit.
This is scary.
I like how we hear just a tracking device. That's very aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In the silence, we just hear the tracker.
Hopper and Owen's just like standing there, just like in fucking shock of what just happened.
Hopper realizes they're coming up through the elevator access point. He runs over there and we see the fucking claw. Punk, and then we cut quickly to black.
Whoo, boy.
Yeah, pretty awesome. It's a great ending.
Yeah, it's the last scene of this is real. It's scary, and there's a lot of, Floyd Fry in the chat said, I seriously thought Steve might die. I thought it was a legit risk.
I did too.
And Floyd, I agree with you, and I said this also in the chat, because while I said, we need to give Steve something new to do, because if not, we have to kill him off. And this is a show where I do think that even though we haven't seen a lot of killing people off, that they would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. So we're at a point where a character like Steve, if you can't give him something to do right now, to kill him off here is a great, it's going to be an interesting catalyst, an interesting situation for Nancy to be in for how she's going to feel.
Yeah.
There's a lot that you can do with something like that, especially now that we all love Steve Harrington so much.
Right.
So I'm glad he didn't die, but I was worried.
I do think that killing one of these characters with as many episodes as there are left in the season, probably wouldn't work from a writing standpoint because it would really throw Hawkins and the whole town into an uproar. You can't just kill a kid and then not expect it to affect every other character in a way to where the whole thing doesn't blow up.
Like it's too soon.
It's too soon. It would have to be an end of season kind of thing.
That's like the penultimate episode is when you kill people.
Yeah, and then you start the next episode in the future and they've already kind of dealt with like the funeral and the mean? Like all that shit. It's really hard.
But they did it with Barb, but that was a little different because that was because you did it with Will, but that was the driving force for the show. You kill Steve Harrington and something different.
Yeah, you can't just kill him and then next up they're like, oh, how sad about Steve? Like that's stupid. Everyone's too connected to Steve for it. It would matter to everyone.
I just think that that's the type of thing where like, you can kill a character off before the end of the show, but if you're not going to do it at the beginning, you've got to do it at the end. You've got to move into the last couple of episodes.
Yep.
Because you assume now our action is just going to go, 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 go for the next three episodes. We're not going to get a break, I feel like. I feel like this is our storyline that we're going to lead through from now to the finale. Excuse me. Where I also feel like we're not going to we're not going to pass a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like 2 weeks are going to go by in the next three episodes. I feel like we're talking a matter of days.
I think you're right. Yeah, once the Demogorgon start to surface.
Escape, yeah.
Sure. We're mission critical here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I think a lot of people are at risk.
Right. Good shit, though. Solid episode. What are your final thoughts on this week's episode? Or any parting wisdom?
I thought it was real good. I thought that, I mean, what a scary last scene with the Demogorgons attacking and Will being like, they made me do it. They upset him and knowing that, you know, you can't trust Will, but you still care about Will. That everybody did so much great stuff in this entire episode. And it's crazy to have an episode, which I guess the premiere was like too. But last season, this was a show about Mike and Eleven. And in this episode, we had zero Eleven. In minimal Mike.
Mm-hmm. And you stole my final thoughts.
So Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. How would you know? I was going to ask you if I would have told you last year at chapter six that we're going to have in a year or whatever it was, next time in the second season, but at the same point in the season, we would have an episode without those characters and it would be wonderful. You would have been like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. And here it is. And they did it. And I didn't miss them. I wasn't like, oh, I wish we would have saw more 11 or I wish Mike would have had more to do. It was perfect. I thought it was a perfect. They did just a great job. Oh, shit. My computer's playing the next episode. I better shut that off. they did such a great job of just, really letting everybody shine.
Yep. It was good.
Again, for the second episode in a row.
It was solid. All right. Well, we're going to get out of here. We'll try to record the next episode in the next, 4 days or whatever. As soon as we can get around to it. We got a lot of shit to record. But, we've been delivering Stranger Things episodes faster than we did the first season. So everybody slow your roll. We'll continue to push episodes as much as we can. We appreciate everybody tuning in. Don't forget to visit us on the web at libertystreetgeek.net. And remember, we cover a lot of different shit. We have a Westworld podcast. Just go to libertystreetgeek.net and you'll see all the podcasts we have. For sure, check out our flagship podcast, which is the Science Fiction Film Podcast. And in December, we're going to be launching a Battlestar Galactica podcast covering the Reimagined series, which is amazing. So you guys should check that out. It's on Hulu if you have Hulu or what have you. But I think we're going to get out of here. All right.
All right.
Take it easy.
Bye, guys.